You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our draft minor league experts, Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis. Guys, great to have you. Let's analyze next Monday's first-year player draft from the tools perspective. Who has the best tools among the college players and the high school players? So we'll get two answers from you guys from each category. Let's begin with the best hitters. Jim, you begin our analysis of the hitters.
Yeah, I think on the college side, I would give the edge to Andrew Benintendi of Arkansas, the SEC Player of the Year. I like him maybe just slightly more than Ian Happ at Cincinnati and Kevin Newman at Arizona. On the high school side, I think I would go with Kyle Tucker from Plant High School in Florida, younger brother of Preston Tucker, who's up with the Astros. And I think he's similar to his brother in that he is going to have that kind of power, but I think he's a better pure hitter and I think a better all-around athlete.
And now to the best power hitters. Jonathan, you have those.
Well, I'll start on the high school ranks, and I think probably the guy who has maybe separated himself a little bit in terms of just the power tool in the high school ranks is Josh Naylor. He's a high school outfielder from Canada who, right around this time every year, the Canadian junior national team goes on a swing through the Dominican, and they play a bunch of Dominican summer league teams. And he hit five homers during that swing. So he's kind of separated himself a little bit with the power, maybe giving him a slight edge over a guy like Brendan Rodgers, who has the best all-around tool set of anybody and has a good amount of raw power. College front's a little trickier. There's not a ton of college power. I think probably the guy who has the most is Chris Shaw. Will likely be a first baseman. Maybe you can stick him in left field, but he's probably a first baseman at Boston College. If people go and look up his numbers, they may not jump out, but he missed a bunch of time with a broken hamate, and that always takes some time to come back, and especially in terms of guys who have a power swing. But in terms of raw power from the college ranks, he's probably it.
All right, John, thanks for that. Let's look at speed, the fastest players out there. Jim has that.
Yeah, on the high school side, I think in the whole draft, the fastest player is Alonzo Jones, Georgia High School infielder who maybe winds up in center field. I don't know how signable he is. I think there's a good chance he winds up at Vanderbilt. And on the college side, the fastest guy, I think, on our top 200 prospect list would be Steven Duggar at Clemson, who ran a sub-6.360 at a Fenway Park workout with Cape Cod League last year. And I don't know if anybody really believes he's a true sub-6.3 runner, but he can really put it down and get around the bases pretty quick. If you went off the top 200, Cam Gibson, Kirk's son, who's at Michigan State, he might be a half step quicker than Duggar. But if you're limiting to the guys that we've ranked in the 200 list, then you go with the Clemson outfielder.
Who has the best arm on the field? Jonathan gives us his thoughts.
Yeah, it's so hard. I mean, because sometimes you're comparing apples to oranges, infield, outfield, catcher, that sort of thing. But I think in terms of high school arms, you could go one of two ways. I'm leaning towards Brendan Rodgers. A lot of people think he may move over to third. But I'd at least send him out as a shortstop, and his arm is true. He's got a lot of carry, and it's accurate. So I think the combination of that gives him the slight edge. Tyler Stevenson also has a 60 arm. He's the high school catcher from Kennesaw Mountain High School. So if you're really looking for a guy behind the plate with a strong arm, I think he'd be the choice. In terms of college guys, there are a couple of shortstops that I would probably look at. Richie Martin from Florida, and Kyle Holder from San Diego. And I think I'll give the slight edge to Kyle Holder, who is generally considered to be the best defensive shortstop in the draft, period. And with that comes a very strong arm from the premium position.
And now Jim takes a look at the best fielders.
Yeah, and you know, as Jonathan mentioned, I mean, I think Kyle Hulder is probably the best defensive player in this draft. You know, some guys will put a 70 on his defensive play at shortstop. I think the consensus is he's more of a 60 on the 20-80 scouting scale, but a very good defender. Richie Martin, also a good defender on the college side from Florida. Best defensive player on the high school side, I think I'm going to go with a catcher. Probably go with Lucas Herbert, California high school product. And then defensive outfielder on the high school side also stands out, and it's not really a surprise. It's Daz Cameron, son of Mike Cameron, who won 3 gold gloves in the big leagues.
All right, let's go out to the mound and look at the pitchers with the best fastball, the heater, the high cheese. Jonathan has that.
Well, I think if we're going to look at the college rank, I mean, my first instinct is to look for maybe a hard-throwing reliever. There isn't a guy who's going to, you know, go out there and throw triple digits. Ryan Burr from Arizona State is a reliever who kind of jumps to mind as a guy who's got a 70 fastball. Riley Farrell from Texas Christian also. But I think maybe I'm going to go with one of the guys close to the top of our board, in Carson Fulmer. Just because he's shown an ability, even if you don't think he's going to start long term, to maintain velocity deep into start. So he gets the edge on the college ranks. And high school ranks, you know, it's often about just projectability. So I'm going to throw two names out at you. One is Donnie Everett. You know, who isn't as projectable as some of the high schools, but he can throw plenty hard. He's touched 99. The other is Mike Nikorak. So if I'm going to pick fastball now, I might go Donnie Everett. If I'm going to project, because I think Mike Nikorak, who's from Eastern Pennsylvania, has a little more in the tank, then I think I'd give him the edge.
Time to look at the pitchers who were tops with the breaking ball, the Yacker, the Uncle Charlie. You know, here's Jim's thoughts.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the top three pitchers on our list all would be in the running for that on the college side. You know, we've got, you know, Carson Fulmer from Vanderbilt. He's got a power breaking ball. Dylan Tate from UC Santa Barbara has a wipeout slider. Tyler Jay from Illinois has a wipeout slider. I would probably go with Jay because I think he's maintained it the best over the course of a season and maybe commands it the best. So I would use that as my tiebreaker. On the high school side, I really like Ash Russell's slider. I got to see it at the Under Armour All-America game last summer. I would go with Ash Russell's slider, although Nikorak's curveball can be pretty nasty as well.
What about the pitchers, Jonathan, with the best control?
Well, you know, I think the college ranks is easy. And it's not a guy who's, like, right at the top of the boards. And he's kind of one of my favorite under-the-radar guys. Jim's probably sick of me talking about him. Thomas Eshelman from Cal State Fullerton is a 65 control guy. He just went out and threw 9 innings in a regional and struck out 14. And he's not really a swing-and-miss guy. But he's one of these guys that does not have you know, huge stuff. But he's got 4 pitches, all average-ish, and well above average control of all 4 of them. And he mixes the pitches, and he throws them all for strikes, and it gives him a chance to be a starter, I think, at the big league level. High school, you know, this is when I think the time when I want to be able to use the phone-a-friend option. Trying to project a guy with control. I think the guy that people talk about the most is probably Drew Finley in Southern California. And again, a guy who does not have tremendous, like, at all. His stuff is average across the board, but he's got at least major league average control of it right now. And you know, this is a guy 6'3", 200 pounds, might have a little more in the tank as he gets to the pro game. He's grown up around the game. His father, David Finley, is the Dodgers vice president of amateur and international scouting. So I'll give him the high school nod.
Let's examine now the best all-around athletes in the draft with Jim.
Yeah, you know, when I think of this category, I try to think of a guy who's got power and speed. And on the high school side, the two guys who I think combine that the best Our Marquise Doherty, who's also been he's a Missouri high school product, who's also been recruited to play football at the University of Missouri. And then Demi Ormoloy, a Canadian kid. If you ever see this kid, I mean, he's 6'4", 225, and he already looks like a big leaguer, and he can really, really run, and he's got a lot of raw power. You know, Garrett Whitley, who's ranked higher than both those guys, of the guys who has a chance to go in the first round, is probably the best high school athlete in the first round. On the college side, I don't know if there's that classic power speed guy. I mean, the two guys who I think stand out to me as the best athletes because they can do a little bit of everything are Dansby Swanson, the Vanderbilt shortstop. I don't think he's going to have big-time power, but he's got some pop, and he can run and throw and play shortstop and do a little bit of everything, like I said, and this is the reason he's probably going to be the number one overall pick on June 8th. And another guy who we mentioned when we talked about the best hitter is Andrew Benintendi. You know, not the biggest guy in the world. He's about 5'10", 170, but he's got, at least average power, and he's a plus runner, and he can play center, and he's, got at least an average arm. So those are probably your two best college athletes, but there's not that unbelievable all-around college athlete this year.
Okay, last category for tools. Who are the guys who might graduate to the major leagues the fastest? We'll start with John and then Jim. Go ahead, John.
Well, I think, this is an interesting year where we have a bunch. We have a few guys right at the top of the draft who, if they go really high, and they probably will, the team that takes them thinks that they're going to start long term. But there is a chance that a team, especially if a team is competing, could shorten one of them up. And they've had success in the bullpen in the past and rush them to the big leagues, sort of like Brandon Finnegan last year for the Royals. And I think, Jim and I would probably agree that the choices for fastest to the big leagues, if you're going to go that route, you've got Carson Fulmer from Vanderbilt, you've got Dylan Tate from Santa Barbara, and you've got Tyler Jay from Illinois, and I'm going to go with Jay mostly because of his left-handedness, where I could see, and he's pitched out of the bullpen all year this year, as opposed to Tate and Fulmer, who have been starting this year and thrown a lot more innings. I could see a team taking him, and if they're hanging around, you leave him in the bullpen for this summer, and you get him to the big leagues, and even if you need him just to get a lefty out here and there, he's got obviously a lot more potential than that, so I'm gonna go with Tyler Jay.
And I would second that. I would go with Jay. I think he throws more strikes than those other two guys because he's been used as a reliever this spring. He's got less mileage on his arm, so I think he'd be able to handle that quick route to the majors if a contender wants to try to do that. On the high school side, I was thinking about this. I would go with Kyle Tucker. I don't think there's a pitcher who necessarily jumps out as a guy who's going to race to the big leagues. That might have been Colby Allard, but he hasn't pitched since March with a stress reaction in his back. And I just think, Brendan Rodgers is the top guy on our top 200. But I think Kyle Tucker is a little bit better hitter than him. He's going to, Kyle Tucker is an outfielder. He's not going to have to change positions. Maybe he winds up going to a corner, but that's not the transition. If Rodgers winds up moving off short at some point, that's going to take some extra time. So I think on the high school side, I might go with Kyle Tucker, Jonathan, as the first prepster to get to the big leagues.
I think that's a good call, just because he does have advanced skills at the plate. The other guys all, I think, probably have a little bit more that they need to learn. I could see a guy like Cornelius Randolph on the high school side not taking as much time as some others. The one thing that will hold him back is if they need to figure out what position he plays, and he may have a learning curve there, if he moves to third base, say. But in terms of his advanced hitting skills, he's a guy that I might throw out there as a guy who might not take as long as some others. And I'll throw Daz Cameron out there with the whole he grew up around the game thing, helping him at least in terms of adjusting to what life is like as a professional.
Jonathan and Jay, very interesting. Thank you both for that. We now welcome to the Pipeline Podcast the Director of Scouting for the Houston Astros, Mike Elias. Mike, great to have you with us. Thanks for taking time from getting fitted for a World Series ring to join us. What's going on in Houston? Wow, this has been a showcase for the Houston Astros farm system. You had a plan and it's paying off.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Appreciate you guys having me on. It's been exciting. We've gotten off to a good start here the past few months. There's certainly a lot of season ahead of us, but some of the guys that we were hoping would come out the gate strong have. We've got more on the way in terms of some reinforcements in the farm system, and we just hope these guys can stay healthy and keep playing the way they're playing. A.J. Hinch, our manager, is doing a great job keeping everybody loose and focused, and kind of exciting. The team's home right now. We got a chance to see them get a good win last night, and some of our scouts are getting into town for the draft, so they get to see the club play too, and it's been fun around here.
Mike, this is Jim Callis here. Obviously, when you're picking near the top of the draft, the picks are always important. Is it fair to say that this year's picks for you guys might take on even more importance than they normally would? Because with the way the team's playing, you guys don't figure to be picking at the top of the draft too often in the near future, and you have an unprecedented opportunity here with two of the top five picks.
Yeah, that is definitely our hope, that this is our last time picking this high in the draft for a long time. We've done it 3 years in a row now since Jeff and I and our group got here. And, this is the fourth year picking high. We have two top picks this year, so it's certainly the most focused that I have been and our staff has been on trying to pull this off. It's never easy picking at the top of the draft, but one way to look at it for us is we've got two bites at the apple this year, and we're hoping to get two players that we really like. And it's nice being able to come away with two guys instead of one, because when you're focused on players at the top of the draft, so many of them are so good, and you like all of them, but you have to pick just one usually. And the way we look at it is we're getting two this year.
Mike, it's Jonathan May. I'm gonna continue on with your apple metaphor. We'll beat it into the ground if possible before the podcast is over. But you talk about getting two bites of the apple. It seems that the apple, at least the at the top, is not quite as juicy as it's been in years past. Does that add any concern or pressure, given that there seems to be even more lack of clarity at the top of the draft this year than there has been in the past few when you've had the number one pick?
I think you're right in saying that it's not clear who the top three or two or five or six players are this year. I think you're going to see more differences of opinion if you were to poll the industry. That said, I'm not convinced that the talent level is necessarily that far down compared to the average year. There's a lot of really good players this year. I think there's going to be a lot of all-stars out of this draft, a lot of middle-of-the-order bats. There's several shortstops in the first round this year. So I think when we look back at this draft class in a few years, it's going to be one of those where people are going to say, hey, that was actually a pretty good class. But that said, there's not a clear consensus. And in some ways that's good, because it liberates us and it liberates other scouting departments to follow their instincts, take risks, maybe not be quite as beholden to the perceptions of the industry and the media and so forth.
How much are the two picks – tied together, Mike, in the sense that if you mentioned there are a lot of shortstops at the top of the draft. If you guys took a shortstop at two, would you be less likely to take a shortstop at five, even if that was the best player on the board at that point? Is there a sense, I think, this time of year there's so many rumors going around. I think a lot of people in the industry think you guys would like to maybe get a pair of position players, but maybe not two high school guys. Are the picks that related?
You definitely think about it in terms of the portfolio that you're coming away with, and you do that every year, whether you've got two picks right on top of each other or you're just looking at a standard one pick every 30 picks. You tend to think about your class as a whole. But that said, when we're picking this high, if we take a shortstop or if we take a high school outfielder with the second pick, I don't think we're going to shut down drafting that category with the fifth pick. It might come into our thought process. It might come into our consideration as more of like a tiebreaker or just something that we think globally about in terms of our organization. But we're not going to close the door to taking two players from any one category.
Any consideration into just letting your dog make the picks for you?
The problem with that is that's the perils of podcasting from home. I've got three dogs, and somebody's ringing my doorbell, and we will have some barking probably in the background here for a minute.
Well, Oh, they have Bark in the Park, you know, Bark in the Draft Room Day. I think, you know, you can't decide who to take at number five. You know, whichever treatment dog picks is who you go with.
Maybe we'll try that next year, but I can promise you we don't have any animals in the draft room this year.
Before you go, Mike, why don't you do us a favor and give Jim and Jonathan and myself a scoop and to just tell us who you're taking at two and at five.
Well, the good news for me this year is I don't have to answer that because we actually have a team picking ahead of us. So I'm gonna cop out and say we need to wait and see who gets to us first. But I'm sure you guys have some guesses about who's going one and then who might go two, and I'll leave you to do the speculation on that since you're the pros in that regard. I want to make your jobs too easy.
Well, my dogs and I think you'll come away with at least one shortstop with the two picks, Mike.
Okay, well, I'll keep that in mind. And have your dogs picked out any big leaguers in the past?
No, I don't think they have a proven track record. So.
Okay, so they're a little untested. That's all right.
And know, Mike, that if there's any confusion, hesitation, know that we're here for you to make the picks on behalf of the Houston Astros organization. Just want to give you that comfort, and we hope that more than anything, the Houston Astros don't pick guys that turn out to be dogs.
Oh, nicely done, Ed.
Well, thanks. We might make use of that resource if we get stumped, but hopefully that we don't run into that situation.
Good. Know that we're here for you. Mike, thank you so much for being with us, and the best of luck not only in the draft but beyond to you and the Houston Astros. We appreciate your kindness in joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Nice talking to you guys.
That's Mike Elias, who is the Director of Scouting for the Houston Astros. And on behalf of Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks for listening to the Pipeline Podcast.